Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Curtis McCormick, the 2023 MWC World Walleye Champion. Curtis is from Western Nebraska, more specifically, real close to Lake McConaughey. Big Mac notoriously pumps out big walleyes. I think a lot of hardcore anglers have Lake McConaughey on their bucket list if they haven't already done it. Anyways, that being said, we hear a lot about Lake McConaughey and what makes that place special, and we hear a little bit about Curtis. I think Curtis's story specifically is pretty interesting to me, just because he's one of those guys that he guides a lot. He's a traveling tournament angler, and he sees success on both sides, and just how he does all that, and just how he is so comfortable in just about any situation on any body of water. I get a lot away from that, you know, just talking about his stories, whether it's traveling for tournaments or, you know, we get a really deep into, you know, this post spawn patterns going on Lake McConaughey, and you know, just talking specifically about how to target big fish in you know, adverse conditions, or just when conditions aren't perfect, because I think that's pretty much all the time. I mean, I think any angler that fishes a lot could say that you more often fish in conditions that are less than perfect, and you got to make adjustments to maintain confidence. You got to make adjustments to see success, whether you're just out fun fishing, whether you're tournament fishing or guiding. And Curtis, you know, his stories and a lot of what we talk about here, I just get a lot away from that in that regard. So let's get into it here. We got Curtis McCormick. We're talking Lake McConaughey, post-spawn, big walleyes. Let's do it. This episode of the JMO Podcast is brought to you by Shields. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at rizavitaxidermystudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO Podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's a fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there, with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. For information on this area and the fishing opportunities here, head to sdglacialakes.com. You'll see the link is in the description of this podcast. On there, you're going to find all the resources that you need to research. Or if you feel like you're already familiar with the fishing opportunities there and you already plan your annual trip, if you're not checking out this website and the information on it, then you're leaving some on the table. Head to sdglacialakes.com.
Tell us who you are, man. Let's start right here, right now.
Well, I'm Curtis McCormick. I grew up in Western Nebraska on a small farm, at the west end of Lake McConaughey. And so we've always had that resource right in our backyard. We could have the boat in the water in like 10 minutes. So as a kid, I was always tagging along with my dad, headed to the lake, or I'd fish our family pond on the farm. And that's kind of where I got my passion for fishing. And then it just kind of evolved to where we were always headed towards the lake, trying to catch some walleyes, and it just progressed from there. And growing up on the farm, I, you know, worked for my dad during the summer, and I probably wasn't the best influence, because all I ever wanted to do was fish, and he was always, you know, we were always trying to get work done, but I would somehow convince him to, it probably didn't take much convincing, but, you know, get our work done in the summer and head to the lake. So we were out there a lot. So, just learning from that, and then pushing my dad to buy the biggest and best boat, and he kind of did his best, and we'd transition from, you know, a 16-foot tiller to a little bit bigger boat, and then had a 19-foot tiller, which we still have today, and just trying to learn and figure out all the tactics and get some sound fundamentals to where you can progress into it. And then we started to where we were getting decent at catching fish, and then I'm about as competitive as it can be. So it transitioned into us fishing the local tournaments, and then, just making the right friends and talking to the right people and taking in as much information as I can get, and then just progressing from there to where I can try and hone my skills a little bit and be competitive in the walleye world.
For you to like get into that or be passionate about it, did you really have to pursue that, or was it just right there? Was there a lot of people around you in your neighborhood growing up? Like, did you know people in this? Was it real easy, or did you have to, is this something that you just had to pursue? I mean, if there was a seminar or a meeting or a club meeting or whatever it is, like, you had to look it up yourself and go after it, or how would you explain that for yourself?
Definitely had to pursue it. There's always been a lot of interest in McConaughey in general, just because of the dynamic of the lake and how it grows fish, and being a reservoir and the fluctuating water levels and the diversity that comes with it. So I had to do the research I needed to do and try and figure it out. And I have such a passion for it that I still haven't quit researching how to do it. And McConaughey is a difficult lake to fish because everything's so different normally every year, being a reservoir, and depending on the weather and the drought, and it, because the lake was built for irrigation, so we're constantly changing. So I had to pursue into the tournament deal at McConaughey in general, because as a kid growing up, I would help with the tournaments, and you see these guys bringing in these big walleyes, and it's just not, as a kid, you just can't wait to catch them big ones and figure it out. And so I just had a passion and a drive to figure out how to catch them big ones. 'Cause there's times at McConaughey where the fishing's really good and everybody can catch a limit, and that kind of swings up and down with the water levels and bait levels and what have you. So I just did my best to, talk to the right people and figure out the right things to target these bigger walleyes in this lake.
You have a guide business. I think that's an interesting dynamic that I want to get into, where tournament fishing and guiding are, like I've said it a million times, I love talking to people that can do it, because they're two totally different things typically. When did guiding sort of fit in there, and how do you sort of balance those dynamics a little bit? Tell me a little bit about that progression with, like, getting into guiding or getting into tournament fishing, and then how did guiding sort of come into your life, and then how do you sort of explain that balance?
Sure. So I would say guiding for me came into effect really before tournaments, because when I was the age, actually I was guiding before I could drive.
Okay.
So a friend of my dad's was a guide, and he early in the morning, he would come get me in my dad's boat and put me on the lake and then go get his boat, and we'd fill him with clients and go out fishing. And so it's kind of comical that I couldn't drive, but legally I could drive a boat in Nebraska. So I was out there taking people fishing because I was always pre-fishing for tournaments with my dad, and he had a tournament partner. So most of the time I wouldn't fish with him, especially when I was in my early teens, but I could, I was always out there. So I was pretty proficient in catching fish and knew what to do and ran the boat. So there was no question with that. So I had started guiding at a young age, and it wasn't full time. I was helping out when they would have a bigger group or what have you. And then throughout college, I would come back home and guide on the weekends or help out. And then I became more proficient with guiding and putting people on these fish. I wanted to test myself in the competitive nature of tournaments. So it just progressed from there. And I was able to take what I learned from guiding, spending days on the lake, and be able to formulate a strategy and put in those fundamentals that you learn doing that, to starting to be competitive in tournament fishing.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty healthy balance. Like you were exposed to both of them kind of, you know, or both of those sort of mindsets kind of at the same time, all encompassing where you, you know, I don't know. I just feel like that's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing to balance or some, you know, somebody, sometimes the best guides, you know, and anywhere in the country, some of the most legendary guides, you know, it's just worth their time better to, you know, make money guiding than to worry about jumping in a tournament, even if it does come on their home body of water. And notoriously, you know, another story in tournament fishing is like, you know, a lot of times the local guys think they got their own home body figured out, but they, you know, without that tournament mindset and strategy of like, okay, I got to be a little bit more creative and find the bigger fish, the tournament fish. Notoriously, some, you know, guys can come in, they look at a body of water objectively, and they end up winning. You know, they beat the locals just because they don't have all those memories and stuff like that. How would you explain that for yourself?
Sure. So I would say it's not the easiest transition from guide day to tournament day, because it's a different mentality when you're taking sometimes, most of the time, novice fishermen out and trying to put them on a bite that's sufficient to satisfy what they're looking for and, you know, entertain them throughout the day, which is no problem. And then on the flip side, really transition the whole boat and the mentality from, you know, we're not trying to catch limits of fish. We got to get the five right bites. So it's a complete different thought process. And for me, we joked because yesterday I had the last two days I had two guide trips and we did fine. We did great. We were catching fish. And then as soon as I got off the lake, I was cleaning the boat and a friend of mine came by while I was doing it. And he kind of joked and he was like, well, are you back in tournament mode? And I had a pile of stuff that I had in the boat, out of the boat, because I knew I wouldn't need it. And it's kind of just laying in a corner in the shop. And then I've got just organized chaos in the boat until I get it all put away right. So there's a big transition from the guide day to the tournament day, but you're able to take what you learn guiding and understand that you can apply those to tournament fishing in regards to catching fish, but there's also almost always efficiencies and different routes that you can take to be competitive and catch the right fish. So I would say the biggest takeaway from that is I need to get myself in the mindset of it's most likely not the numbers game when it's tournament day versus guide day, to where you need to go get the right bites.
What tournament circuits do you fish right now?
I've dabbled quite a bit in the Masters Walleye Circuit. We've had some success there. We were fortunate to take the 2023 World Walleye Championship in South Dakota, and that was quite the experience. And I also fish some Western stuff because I'm not far from Wyoming. So I fish the Wyoming Walleye Stampede, and those are Western reservoirs that are real dynamic. And the competition from those guys up there are just as good as any competition I've seen anywhere in the nation. And it's a complete different dynamic of lakes up there, and they're really, really interesting stuff to fish. And so, you know, those tournaments up there will have 150 boats in it, so there's a lot of competition up there, and it's exciting to go up and fish them bodies and all the different tactics you can use to catch fish. I also fish some of the local tournaments in Nebraska, especially on McConaughey. So with those three, that's pretty much takes up all my time with guiding and my other business and tournament fishing. So that's about all I can squeeze in.
The championship that you guys won last year, is that, tell me a little bit about that. Like, you guys got to qualify for that one, to be in the championship. Did you fish them all? Or how did that sort of formulate itself?
Yeah, it's a qualified tournament, and the MWC takes, you have to fish at least three to qualify, and you take your best three tournaments for the year. So we only fished three, but we did qualify. We knew it was going to be there, and it's way closer than to us than any of the other ones. Like, we fished Cass Lake, and it was, I think, a 14-hour drive for me to get there.
Yeah.
So which I don't mind. I mean, I don't really mind the road time, but being away from, I've got a young family and being away from them is tough. So, with that championship being in South Dakota, we wanted to try and qualify for that because actually I hadn't fished. It was on Lake Sharp at Pier and I hadn't fished there in years, but I knew just to qualify for it with it being close, I knew we could go up there and be competitive. So we got there. I think we pre-fished for 3 or 4 days and I knew some guys that lived there. So we had some decent information and we kind of by weather were forced into a situation that really worked in our favor. So we were able to fish kind of our strengths and find a big fish bite that really panned out good. So catching, you know, it's no secret on those lakes that with their slot limit 1/20, if you can get into a big one or two, you're going to do really well in the tournament. So that was kind of our goal and we made the right decisions at the right time and was able to clinch that deal. So it was really exciting and it was close enough. Both our families were able to be there. So it was really an awesome experience.
And who did you fish that with?
I fished with Tom Seberg. He's from Eastern Nebraska. He's a great guy. We worked together really good. So really played off each other's strengths and able to, you know, tournament deals are very, very thinking critical. So guys need to make the right decisions and keep each other calm and just kind of watch your own bobber and do your thing and don't make any mistakes. And we kind of compliment each other on that. So we were able to do it right and get the bites we needed to get and made it happen. So,
yeah. And that was in the fall, right? I mean, most of the championships are.
Yeah. It was in October.
Which yeah.
The whole system's changing and we had some like 40 mile an hour blow days that we fished, you know, we fished all 3 days and it was some obstacles to overcome with the wind and the weather and what came with it. So we were fortunate to find the fish that we needed and they stayed for the right amount of time and got the right bites.
Yeah, man. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the fishing. I mean, I feel like it's just fun to kind of learn how you come up in fishing and being from Western Nebraska. You know, I think, I don't know, that sort of stuff fascinates me, these Western reservoirs and you know, just, I don't know, a lot of these reservoirs are, you know, I mean, our country's only 250 years old. I mean, a lot of these reservoirs are relatively young. You know, we think about McConaughey and those big fish, it's healthy. You know, there's a big story, you know, fun stories to hear about that with like the forage base and stuff like that. I think a lot of this stuff, you know, it's each of these reservoirs are kind of unique. I kind of want to get into that a little bit, but I feel like if you can sort of, you know, just figure out the mindset of like how to break this stuff down, it's really transferable to anywhere you go. You know, with any sort of similarity, especially, you know, just from one reservoir to the next, there's certain things that are unique to that place, you know, whichever place you're talking about. A lot of this stuff can trigger some pretty productive thinking to take a lot of other places too, right? I don't know, I really like it. And I kind of want to get into, I mean, if you guide and have done a lot of fishing on McConaughey, you know, I'd like to kind of dig into that a little bit. And maybe just kind of staying a little bit broad first, I do want to get into like this time of year and some of the patterns going on this time of year, but just to kind of talk a little bit about McConaughey, you know, still kind of generally, tell me a little bit about McConaughey and how that sets up and maybe sort of the seasonal patterns. Give me sort of the blanket statement of what it's like or things you need to know about McConaughey.
Yeah. So McConaughey is on the western end of the state, right at the edge of the panhandle of Nebraska, and it lays on the North Platte River. The lake is 25 miles long and around 5 miles wide at the widest, and it's a pretty deep lake, and it fluctuates a lot depending on weather, so the water level itself. There is 50 miles of white sand beaches on this lake. So most of the lake, even though there's contoured structure, is flat sandy bottom. The thing that happens with when the water fluctuates our lake has changed drastically in the last 20 years, because when I was growing up learning how to fish the lake, there was relatively no standing timber, no structure like that. It was all mud bottom or sand bottom, and you could almost pull from one end of the lake to the other and hardly snag anything. Mid 2000s, we went through a drought and the lake was 40% capacity for 4 or 5 years, and up and down, but roughly less than half. So in that time frame, the lake changed from a fairly featureless bottom, other than the contours that are, to flooded timber now that grew up while the lake was low. And so it caused the walleye structure and the walleye behavior to completely change. The main forage in the lake is shad and alewives, with the heavy side being the alewives, and those being kind of a pelagic roaming bait fish. We're certainly upside down on predator to prey. So we're heavy on alewives for sure. So that's one of it's good and bad, because they are like Hershey bars for walleyes, but there's a lot of them. So it can be tough fishing at times, but the fish you catch, it's no secret that Big Mac grows them big, and that's the reason. So the fishing is starting off early in the year. Most of the fish stage down towards the dam. I'd say 90% of the fish spawn on the dam. So there's a fairly good pre-spawn bite on jigs on the northeast side of the sand, and they're pretty scattered, and those are all pre-spawn, full of eggs, really big fish. Weather permitting and ice off and that kind of thing, it can be a really good bite. And then early to mid-April, they move into spawning mostly on the dam. There's some that spawn in the tributaries along the north side of the lake and the river, but primarily on the dam. And then mid-April till mid-May, post-spawn, those fish head west either to warmer water or feeding flats and that sort of thing, and they'll hit those deep contours directly adjacent from the dam. And that's normally that time of year is the depth of what of the alewives are staging, just off of those breaks or out in the middle at that same depth. And those things cruise in them bait balls, and they'll stack up along those break lines and ambush them as they come in and out, because the alewives, as the water warms, are staging to spawn. So they just keep moving closer and closer to shore. So.
And then what time of year do the alewives spawn?
Those alewives spawn usually into May, and it's about 50 to 55 degrees is when they're real shallow spawning. And we've got normally a good casting bite with spinner baits, which is a little unorthodox for walleyes, but spinner baits and big paddle tails, jerk baits can be really good. And at the same time, because of all the sand and the abundance of alewives, they're kind of running out of rocky spawning habitat. So they're starting to spawn on the sand. So it can be, quite frankly, from one end of the lake to the other with spawning fish shallow. So you can really catch them when the alewives are spawning from one end of the lake to the other shallow. So it can be a real interesting bite all the way up and down the lake.
Yeah, and Nebraska never shuts their walleye season off. Is that correct?
There's not a season, no. There's a pretty popular bite during the spawn on the dam. It'll get pretty packed down there. It's kind of a mess, but yeah, they get targeted good there, and then they throughout the year, they kind of make a lap of the lake. So they head west, and sometimes they'll be as far up in the west end as you can get in that muddy water, and then back down the south side. So it's an interesting body of water for sure.
If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate, with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to Shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to Shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's a fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. For information on this area and the fishing opportunities here, head to sdglacialakes.com. You'll see the link is in the description of this podcast. On there, you're going to find all the resources that you need to research. Or if you feel like you're already familiar with the fishing opportunities there and you already plan your annual trip, if you're not checking out this website and the information on it, then you're leaving some on the table. Head to sdglacialakes.com. You're going to find the lodging opportunities. You're going to see maps of the area. You click on the fishing tab. It's going to showcase some of the great fishing opportunities in that area. From there, you can look up the local guide services or the bait shops. That's where you're going to find the real-time fishing reports that you need when you're looking ahead and planning on one of these trips. So again, if you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglacialakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description of this podcast.
What are the patterns? What are some of those big considerations? Like, is McConaughey a wind-driven place, or is it a place where you drive around and do some of that high-speed graphing, to find the bait, to find the fish? Like, what's it like to fish out there this time of year? And what are some of the things that you do to be successful?
Directly after spawn, when those fish are done spawning, there's usually a good jig bite shallow. So that's what I target first. They come directly off the dam and they're in the warmest water, shallow spots they can get. And if you can find them, you can catch them pretty good on jigs and paddle tails, or marabou jigs is a big deal out here. And we've caught them on jerk baits really good too, shallow. So that's directly after spawn. And then the main annual walleye behavior for this lake is, especially for the females, they leave the dam and they find the bait directly out from the dam. And then as that bait starts transitioning into closer to shore, posting for spawn, lines up right in time for them walleyes are done with the most strenuous thing they're going to do all year. So they are feeding heavily on those alewives. So if you can find those fish feeding on alewives, we usually tend to deep contour troll with big deep stick baits, and it can be a really good bite. It's pretty technical, but if you can find what you're looking for, that's usually a really successful time to be out there catching trophy class walleyes.
I assume that it's more of a deal where you're fishing areas. Maybe you troll for a couple of miles, or is it, so, you know, can it get kind of spot on the spotty? Do you have a lot of waypoints out there? Maybe describe that a little bit as far as like, just sort of like how those fish operate on a day-to-day basis.
I do have a lot of waypoints, but there is, the lake's laid out. It's a river basin. So you've got shallow rolling contours into the middle of the lake, basically, and they follow the contour of canyons and cuts coming in, not canyons, but they're whatever tributaries came into the lake before they filled it. So you'll have some steep contours coming up to these big shallow flats. But for the most part, if you're trolling, it's a mile long pole that you can do following these contours, and it's relatively the same depth, and some of it's flatter than the other parts are. These fish normally set up in the same areas almost every year. They can be scattered throughout those poles, but there's definitely spots in the lake that hold fish annually, and it's mainly because these feeding flats that are adjacent to the deepest water and high percentage areas that hold bait fish, there's always certain spots where you catch them. Now they do scatter a lot. It's hard to target them with casting because there might be quarter mile between fish sometimes when they're up there feeding. So it's not the easiest thing to do to get them on forward facing. It can be done, and I've done it a little bit, but for the most part, trolling's the best way to go in this particular scenario because of how far they'll scatter out with those long contours.
I'm sure you got plenty of wind days. It's like not every day is an ideal day. So what are some things that you do on a day-to-day basis, things that you encounter that maybe, you got to make adjustments for? I kind of want to talk a little bit about that and just more of the technical side of how you like to troll for this like post-spawn pattern on McConaughey.
Yeah, so mainly with these fish being a little deeper, we're using lead core or snap weights, and the wind kind of dictates which one of those I'll pick. And I tend to lean towards snap weights because I can get my baits where they need to be and utilize less line out. So fighting these fish is a little bit easier when you got less line out and you got less time for them to fight and shake off, because predominantly they're big fish. So fairly easy to target when you get to that point, but there's a lot of attention to detail that goes into it. And it's this deal's really no secret. There's a lot of guys that understand it, and there's a lot of guys that are really good at it. And the other guides are really targeting these fish, which is great. People have a chance at some trophy class fish, but you know, when we go out there, especially on a wind day, you've got to utilize sound fundamentals in regards to trolling and make sure your speed's right, and make sure your depth's right, and colors, and formulate a strategy to be successful out there. And there's so many variables when it comes into it. There's, you know, current and colors of baits, and could be debris on the bottom that you're picking up if you're too close to bottom, and a whole slew of things that can go against you. But you have to just go out and kind of process the data that your sonar is giving you, and understand, you know, if there's, even though it's a reservoir, sometimes it gets to be where there's some wind driven current in the lake. And you just have to understand what's going on around you so that you can make the best decisions to be successful doing it.
Thinking about water temperature and just fish activity, like a lot of times, you know, post spawn is still cold water, and we're still talking about, slow retrieves, or, you know, jigging a minnow, you know, for a lot of people. Or when it comes to trolling, it's like cold water trolling has a lot to do with, you know, what baits and actions you're putting in front of these fish and how fast you go. Talk to me a little bit about what that's like on McConaughey. I know you got a lot of experience with this, so you kind of probably already know day to day where you're going to start, but let's just say objectively, you're going to go out and break it down like you haven't been out there for 3 weeks. What are some of those things you're going to do to kind of break it down for that day and figure out where the fish are and what they want and how they want it?
Sure. So if I haven't been out there for a while, most likely my point of attack would be high percentage areas where I normally catch fish, but they move around so much depending on the bait to where I would spend sometimes the first hour kind of driving around and graphing those contours and those break lines, and shallow and deep. They could be suspended off those breaks. I just kind of let my electronics dictate where I'm going to start. And then when I see the right fish with the right bait, I'll make a decision on, you know, which baits I'm going to use. If I'm going to use snap weights or lead core, kind of my speed will be dictated on water temperature. Right now we're around 50 degrees, give or take you know, 3 or 4 degrees, depending on what the weather has been like the last few days. And then I will kind of plan my day based off of wind direction the last few days. McConaughey can be really wind driven. So I'll go out and do some diligence graphing and find what I like to see, and then set up and formulate the right strategy to present my baits in the best way possible. And I think a lot of guys will go out and just, well, we caught them here 2 days ago, they're going to be here, which is either right or wrong. There's really no either way in between. And rather than looking around and making sure that's what they want before they set everything up, they just start fishing, and then they might go a half a day before they figure out the right attack to it. So that's my main strategy. In regards to how close to bottom, I just let the fish tell me that. If they're 10 feet off bottom, that's where I'm going to put everything. If they're on the bottom, you know, I'll try and get as close as I can without touching, because normally you're picking up some grass or debris from the fall and winter, and it doesn't take long to foul your baits. So you got to pay attention to that. And one of the main things I'll look for when I'm looking for the right fish is if the fish are laying on the bottom or if they're off the bottom. If I can find fish that are off the bottom, they're actively feeding, and it usually doesn't take long to catch some.
You know, on McConaughey, what are some of the things, you know, specifically, you know, whether it's colors, crankbaits, the action, how fast you like to go, what are some of those things that you feel like really matter the most to just being the most productive out there and catching some of these bigger post-spawn fish?
I think there's a lot of variables in it. It's in regards to speed. You know, as the water gets up, you know, around 50, I think that guys, well, the gold standard number for trolling is 2 miles an hour, right? But it can fluctuate to where, you know, you're going 1.5 and doing way better, or, you know, you step it up to 2.5 to 3, which is rare this time of year because the water's cold. But it's, I feel like at that point, it's more of a reaction deal than anything. But the type of bait can really come into effect. Some of them are tighter, and some of them are wider wobble, and some of them work great at those lower speeds, where others will, you know, are really like a lethargic action and don't really do much for you, which can be good and bad at the same time too. I typically, you know, I'll start depending on water level and what I'm seeing on my graph. If fish are up off the bottom and they're real active, I'll kind of lean towards a little bit faster. Yesterday we were out in a 25 plus mile an hour steady wind with over 40 gusts. So we had some wave action to deal with, and boat control was tough to say the least. But I found that, you know, sometimes I was seeing close to 3 miles an hour just from the surge of the waves, and we were still catching them. So I think it just depends on the day, and don't be afraid to, if you're not doing good, bump it up. And a lot of guys, you know, lead core and snap weights are so speed dependent that they get their line set at 1.9 miles an hour and they're a foot off bottom and they're comfortable with that and they won't move all day, and then it could be a slow day. So just don't be afraid, I think, to just experiment a little bit with speeds and depths, and sometimes it takes changing your depth on your baits all the time and adjusting speed so that you're in the same strike zone, but you're going a little faster or slower, and just move around and do some S turns and kind of let the fish dictate what they want on any particular day. And colors vary all the time. Yesterday, if it wasn't blue, you weren't getting bit. And the day before that, it was a different deal. So, I would just not be afraid, if I was giving anybody advice, to experiment a little bit. You might be going around people at 2.5 miles an hour, but sometimes those reaction bites are just as good as anything. So,
you know, just hearing those personal stories of like what happened yesterday and the day before, I think that stuff is, I take a lot away from that, because, you know, I can easily be that person that, I tell myself that I don't fish memories that much. And a lot of times, you know, to me, or you know, when I'm telling myself I can't fish a memory, I feel like that really only applies to waypoints. Or there's sort of a progression to that where, you know, I might not be fishing waypoints, but that doesn't mean I'm not fishing a memory when it comes to the bait I choose to use and the speed I choose to, you know, troll it at. Like, sometimes that's the memory. Sometimes it's like I might not be in the same place, but I still can't get that 1.9 out of my head, and I can't get that blue chrome out of my head, and you know, I'm still in a memory even if I'm not on the same waypoint. So I like hearing that, you know, that, you know, being adventurous, you know, from somebody that's fished there your whole life, you fish tournaments, you guide, like, you know, you've approached that lake in just about any way, shape, or form you could to, and, you know, you've interpreted success out there just about any way anybody could try to be successful, numbers, you know, size, tournament, competition, like all of that. And, you know, to come out of that knowing that you got to be, you know, you still got to fish the day. Don't be scared. You know, you're in a situation, talking about yesterday, like 50 some degree water temps, and you're trolling like at or above 2.5 miles an hour just because you know, just because the wind is blowing you and you can't even slow down, but you're still getting bit. Like, you know, those are that's really interesting stuff. You know what I mean? Like, most people wouldn't even be thinking that voluntarily, right? Like, that's I don't know. I just find that to be really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to take credit for, you know, figuring out a fast speed reaction bite, because sometimes yesterday there wasn't much I could do about it. And
right,
we got out there and I knew going out, it was either going to be really good or really bad. And we got as far as I needed to go. And I was like, it was straight west wind. And I told those guys, I was like, we're going to troll east, and if we're not catching them, we're out of here. So, you know, we put everything out, and I was watching my speed, and there was only so much I could do with kind of the direction of the wind and the way the contour laid out to keep myself around that 2 miles an hour. But there was times I was looking down and just the waves pushing us just to stay close to where the fish were. There wasn't a lot I could do without being over what I wanted to be.
Right.
But I know we caught 1 8-pounder yesterday, and I looked at the speed when I seen it on the rod, and it was 2.8, and I could not believe it. And it had to be, you know, that's really the only explanation, that it was a reaction deal. So,
sure. Yeah,
they were going good in that wind.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great. It's like, yeah, because, you know, when somebody just can't, you know, I mean, I don't know, the way I say it, it's like I'm this person. Like, I'm the same like amateur angler that's like, sometimes if the conditions aren't allowing me to do anything that is within my comfort zone, my confidence just gets crushed. And as soon as that happens, I'm not making good decisions. I'm not observing an adjustment that needs to be made, or I'm not interpreting things, like, you know, totally properly. I'm just stuck on the fact that I'm, you know, that my confidence is dead and I'm not doing it exactly the way I want to. And enough of those days, and it's like, when I see the wind blowing, I decide not to even go out, you know. But again, learning from guys that fish tournaments, you don't get to choose the weather when you got to go fish a competition. When you're a guide, if you want to make money, you got to fish, you know, a lot of tough days. If you're only going to guide on nice, easy, perfect days where the fish bite, you're not going to make any money. Like, you're going to be bankrupt. So it's like learning from guys that have that kind of experience. And it's like, I think learning that, you know, just that mindset where it's like, God, you can be in kind of a, you know, that'd be a wildly uncomfortable situation for a lot of anglers to be in. And you're out there making it work. And then you have this, you know, kind of like a pretty cool experience. It's like, maybe next time you won't go out and necessarily do that on your own, right? Like, voluntarily. But the fact that it happened, you know, I mean, you know, you had to be out there with good intentions, not allowing it to affect your confidence entirely to even be in a position to make that happen, to net that 8-pounder, you know? So, I mean, and you got to be on a body of water that produces 8-pounders. McConaughey does. So, but no, I think those are great stories, man. I mean, it's that time of year right now where you're a little bit south of a lot of us in the upper Midwest, right? So, you know, we're somewhere in the spectrum of the spawn, a lot of stuff around here, you know, a lot of the hatcheries, you know, they're harvesting eggs or they're maybe done with it, but you know, we're getting close to the spawn, being over in a lot of these bigger reservoirs, but the fish are just moving out. So we're a couple weeks away from this being kind of the deal for us up here, talking about you down there in McConaughey, but it's like, you know, I think there's a lot to take away from that. I mean, you got to be able to fish adverse conditions and not let it kill your confidence and, you know, and be able to sort of be observant and be still find a way to be in some way, shape or form efficient, you know, just to give yourself a chance. And it can be, yeah, it can just be, yeah, it can be the fish of the, you know, I mean, it's spring fishing, right? It's like, this is what we wait all year for, is for the chance to be in the boat and catching hungry, you know, these big hungry females and figuring out these bites, man. Well, I don't know, man, we could probably go for another hour. I love hearing about, you know, the alewives and the, you know, just the forage base down there. It's a little bit unique. And those big fish, the story about the reservoir going down and growing up all that vegetation and the trees and then flooding again. And I know that spinnerbait deal is a whole other conversation. We've talked a little bit about that in the past, but, you know, that's a whole nother conversation that we could probably do sometime. I think that's really, really cool. But I like this, you know, like the deep contour trolling on a reservoir. There, you know, there's some version of that happens throughout the year on all these reservoirs and a lot of bigger natural lakes too, for that matter. I mean, obviously, like, trolling is still like absolute king on the Great Lakes. And you look at like Lake of the Woods in northern Minnesota, you look at, you know, any big body of water, if somebody wants to go and learn a lot and you know, figure out where fish live, you know, contour trolling is the deal. You know, so just hearing about your experiences down there definitely primes the pump, you know, and helps us all knock the rust off coming into this season for us, or, you know, for a lot of people that are just starting to learn confidence in it. Just hearing your stories and being open-minded and don't get so set that you got to get out there and get your lines wet immediately in the morning. Do some trolling around. Try to see, you know, try to learn what you can learn on your electronics. You know, you never know what it is. Sometimes it's, you know, sometimes you know where the fish are, but if they're 10 feet off bottom, there's no reason to fish 10 feet below them right off the bottom, right? We're all thinking about how we can hum our baits right on the bottom, but, you know, be observant of your electronics. See where the fish are in the water column. That in itself can make a day for you or a trip, you know, and figuring out what the fish want, that whole process. I love it all, man. Well, anyways, Curtis, what would be a closer? Not that we need one, we're really good on time, but what else comes to mind? Some things that you feel like you want to touch on for this time of year on McConaughey?
I would just reiterate, if anyone's planning on coming down here, there is a plethora of really knowledgeable guides down here, you know, so a phone call to most of these guys will yield you some pretty good information right off the bat. I would suggest McConaughey can be tough. So if you want to come down and cut your learning curve a little bit, then talk to these guys and maybe go out with them for a day. You know, you're going to get some good information in a hurry, and there's a lot of good dudes that do it. So, I wouldn't be scared of that. If you're going to come out here just and expect this deep contour trolling, just pay attention to your electronics and the wind forecast from the days prior and the days coming up. I kind of, you know, I've got the equipment to handle big blow days like that, and I'm comfortable being out there. So I usually have a discussion with clients before we go out about it. And as we did yesterday, and we just went and gave it a shot, but, you know, McConaughey and the big wind, it was serious out there. So if it's springtime windy like that, just be cautious of what's going on out there, because it can get real. But most of the time, you know, there's nice weather to be had and a lot of good fishing to be had. So just pay attention to your electronics and let the fish tell you what you want. And reach out to the local guides, because they'll help you out. Most all of them, they're all good dudes. So If you've got any questions, you can reach out to me or any of the other guides, and they'll point you in the right direction for sure.
And so, what's the name of your guide business?
Mine is Wings and Walleyes. You can find me at wingsandwalleyes.com or Facebook, Nebraska Wings and Walleyes, and Wings and Walleyes on Instagram. So give me a shout and we'll get you in the right direction or get you out on the boat. So
yeah, dude. Yeah, I think that's so true. It's like going to a place like that, you know, I mean, you know, you're kind of in that part of the world where, I mean, McConaughey's a bucket list. Like you grew up there, but you know, it's not like you don't know this. Like that's a bucket list place for any walleye angler anywhere. I mean, that's a, you know, like that's, you know, for some of us, we've got, you know, maybe that one place on our mind, like in the wintertime, you go to Lake Winnipeg to catch those big greenbacks, or somebody from the Midwest might be thinking, you know, the Columbia River, that's where we got to go to catch these big fish. Like, but any real, you know, walleye angler that I ever talked to, I mean, you want to look at a top five list or a top 10 list, like McConaughey's on everybody's list, especially if they've never been there. And, you know, I don't know. I like talking about it, like hearing more about it. And it's definitely, yeah, to travel all the way down there and do something. I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of anglers would love to pull their own boat, you know, as they should. But, yeah, the advice to hire a guide or at least get good information from a guide, I think that is spot on. If you're going to spend 4 or 5 days down there, you know, book somebody like you. You know, book somebody like you for at least a day, or at least just make your first trip. Go down there with your fishing buddies. Don't even pull a boat. You know, just jump in the car. You know, save the gas money. Go down there and spend 3-4 days with somebody like you. You know, you're probably gonna learn some things that you can take home to your home body of water. You know, just some fun fishing technique and conversation there. But also, just learn how to operate, because no one day is gonna tell you how to do it all. No one day's conditions is going to teach you everything you need to know about McConaughey. And, yeah, I think, you know, that's just an easy promotion for me to make. It's easy to pass along that advice, because I live it. I think that, when I go places, you got to really look at your dollars spent and where that's going to get you. It might take you, you know, a week, a year for 10 years to learn what you might have learned on a 3-day trip with you the first time. And then you could, you know, and then you could spend the next 9 years being more successful. And what's that worth to you? You know? So, yeah. Great, man. Well, great stuff, Curtis. I appreciate you reaching out and having the time for us. Absolutely. I love the stories, just kind of learning about you and learning about that part of the world. And, yeah, I think that this post-spawn deal, especially on these reservoirs, is going to be a huge deal this year. And it's fun to hear about those big fish down in McConaughey. So hopefully we get to do it again down the road sometime. There's a lot of things we ought to be talking about. So anyways, I'll let you to it, man. I know you got to go do a little bit of pre-fishing right now. So get out, yes, there, sir. Get after it. We'll be paying attention for you in that tournament. I think you're over in Wyoming even. So yeah, dude. Appreciate the time, Curtis, and we'll be in touch, brother. Yeah, that's it. We'll sign it off.
Okay, I appreciate it.